Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
We must together work together to see where we are, where we are headed, where we are going, and our vision for where we should be, but also see it as a moment, yes, to together address the challenges and to work on the opportunities.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Studios America, the podcast, of course, every day is available wherever you get your podcasts. But we also have a couple times a week, State of the Race. It is an update on kind of the nerdy back room, you know, polling and campaign details. You can get that as part of the subscription whenever you follow my channel or whatever you do. When you go to a podcast app, just do that and you'll see it pop up. We had a great one on Friday, which was the breakdown of the RFK Jr. stuff. I think you'll like that quite a bit. I talked a little bit about that on my appearance on Megyn Kelly today. So go check that out as well if you haven't listened to it yet. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/studiosamerica and be sure to hit the bell for notifications. When we post new content, you'll see that. But also, you know, when we have like a comedy bit or a new show, that'll pop up. But also when we go live, we've been going live quite a bit throughout the election season. So we ask you to join us there. Dan Andros is here with us today to talk to us about the kind of depressing side of the 2024 election. We promise a joy-free segment. Mm-hmm. We also got more Kamala flip-flops for you in an already flip-flop inundated summer, but we're going to start by doing Kamala's basement campaign. And I actually think the basement campaign, we're using it today, but I think it's a little unfair to Joe Biden because Joe Biden ran a basement campaign last time in 2020. We all remember that. Yeah, he couldn't want him to get COVID, got to stay in the basement. But Joe Biden was doing interviews from his basement. We were mocking him for being in his basement because he wasn't doing a lot of public events or doing press conferences or really being challenged in an open environment like normal candidates. But she's taken this to a totally new level. I mean, if you remember, you know, if you don't vote for Joe Biden, you ain't black. That was an interview from the basement, even though I think it was actually like his family room. But bottom line was, he was doing interviews. Kamala isn't. And that's where we are right now. Now, we are getting close to a very important deadline. I hope you're all a tingle waiting for it like I am. As she hits the campaign trail, Harris approaches self-imposed deadline for a sit-down interview. Yes, she promised she would schedule, not do, but schedule an interview before the end of the month. And it is August 27th today. So I don't know if mathematicians out there might note that August 31st is just 4 days away to schedule an interview. Now, she could schedule it for 2038 if she wants. So we have announced that we are scheduled. I don't even know if she has to do the announcement in August. She just has to schedule it technically in August. In 2064, we'll be sitting down with Rachel Maddow. If she's still alive, we hope she is. There is a big article in, Playbook? Inside Harris's, this is Politico, Harris's big interview decision. And the decision is, of course, not to do one, because she's definitely going to do one. She's not going to go through a whole presidential campaign without doing an interview, right? No, no. It's the process, which is fascinating to read. I can't go through all the details here because we're a little tight on time today. But I will say, like, basically, she's asking members of the press who she should do an interview with. Who do you think I should do it with? I don't know. It's going to be very close. Should we do it with this person who's going to be really nice to me or another person? You know, maybe the person I pick is the person who I'm convinced is going to be nicest to me. It's really a fascinating read, but it shows how pathetic the campaign actually is. You know, we talk about being tough as president, being a big leader as president. And that's an important thing, right? Like, you don't get to choose what interview, what conversation you have when someone's threatening to fire a nuclear missile at you. You have to just basically do it. You have to be ready to move on your feet a little bit. And she's so allergic to that approach, I think intelligently so. You know, that's one of the things that's really interesting about the Kamala Harris campaign. Usually what you see, and this is what you saw with Joe Biden, is a person that everyone around him knows you shouldn't be doing any interviews. You shouldn't be doing any speeches. Just stay hidden. Everyone knows that. Everyone around him knows that. But Joe Biden believes he's still okay. He can still do it. That's different with Kamala Harris. It is an advantage for Kamala Harris in a campaign like that. She is the one, she is not, everyone around her says, Kamala, don't do any interviews. Kamala, don't do any speeches. Keep it on script. Just zip it. No press conferences for you. Normally the candidate has pride and steps up and says, you're right. Says you're wrong. I'm going to do these interviews, and I'm going to step up and say, you know what? I can talk to anybody. I know these issues, and then they wind up smashing their face into a brick wall. Kamala is smart enough to know she's bad at this. That makes her dangerous. She knows I'll just stay out of this. I don't have any pride. I don't have to go out there and prove that I can do an interview with, you know, somewhat adversarial news source. I'll just hide. And she's smart enough to know she's not capable of doing it. That is a real advantage for a candidate. For all of the bashing that she gets for how bad she is as a politician, she's really good at a couple of things. Number one, behind the scenes backroom dealing. She's really freaking good at that. She arranged her and she got all the millionaires and billionaires in San Francisco behind her back in the day. She was able to have a big campaign launch with laudable all sorts of lauding media coverage because she believed she could do that. She was able to work those behind-the-scenes relationships to get people to praise her. She can raise money. That kind of works with part one, right? Like, it's partially backroom relationships, but she can raise a ton of money. She raised $82 million over the past, like, week. It's been pretty impressive, the money raising. And, like, she's competent when she's on script. Those are her strengths. She's aware of her weaknesses, and she's avoiding them at all costs. So how many days has it been since she's done an interview? Well, a lot of people are saying it's been 39 days, and in some ways that's true. Since she launched her campaign, she's gone through 39 days. I didn't think that was possible, honestly, at least before this campaign started. I never thought it was possible that you could go 39 days without doing an interview as a presidential candidate. It's never happened before. I can't imagine it's happened before. But it's certainly out of the norm, at the very least, as to what candidates normally do. But in reality, it's actually been 61 days since she's done an interview. 61 days. Because she didn't do an interview the day before she got the nomination. Yes, it's been 39 days since she hasn't done an interview as a presidential candidate, but it has been 61 days since her role as vice president where she hasn't done an interview. And in fact, the last time she did an interview was the day of the night of the debate, immediately post to that debate. Now, look, the press is only going to push for an interview if they believe it's going to help her, okay? And that is possible. They may come to a place where it gets so embarrassing that the American people are, like, so shrugged, like, you know, looking at her, like, with curious eyes as to why she's not doing an interview, that it might actually become beneficial for her to do one. And only at that point will the media jump on this bandwagon with us. And honestly, it probably will take bad polling. Some poll that comes out and says, wow, 75% of the American people are saying she should do an interview. They're embarrassed she hasn't done one yet. At that point, maybe she will actually do one. But if you remember back to 61 days, and it seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? It's about 8 weeks ago, a little bit over 8 weeks, where the debate, the disastrous debate performance by Donald Trump and Joe Biden, Joe Biden's part of it, disastrous, occurred, and he had to step down from the race. And I will remind you, we have about 10 weeks till the actual debate. So that being said, a lot can change. I mean, 8 weeks ago was a totally different situation. In 10 weeks, we have a debate ahead or an election ahead of us that could be a totally different picture. A lot of times people say you shouldn't even pay attention to the polls until after Labor Day. We haven't even hit Labor Day yet. So we really have a lot to come in this election. But this particular election. Kamala Harris says Biden had a slow start but a strong finish in the debate after Anderson Cooper pressed her in Dem Panic. And this was the beginning of the golden age of journalism. Anderson Cooper kind of kicked it off. The first real moment of actual journalism in that 2 to 3 week period where all of a sudden everyone woke up and all of a sudden had a million different stories about how Joe Biden had fallen asleep during big meetings and he couldn't speak, he couldn't stay on topic. All of that happened in that 3 weeks where everyone found their journalistic chops. And let me give you a moment of that debate, because it told me, or that interview after the debate, because it told me a couple of different things, a couple of really important things at the time. One of them was, you should be a little scared of Kamala Harris. At the time, conservatives, when I would say we got to root really, really hard for Joe Biden to drop out, or to not to drop out. Jeez, I'm all over the board today. Too many shows today. I did the radio show, Megan's show, and now this show. So my mind's all over the place. I apologize for my lack of focus today. I'm like Joe Biden out there. It's a little bit catastrophic. But I would tell people, hey, like, don't sleep on Kamala Harris. Why? Because when she's on script, she's actually okay. And the difference between her and Joe Biden will make your jaw drop. And I said that. I said at the time, I joked that Donald Trump should come out and be like, you know what? I'm kind of considering Stormy Daniels for Secretary of Defense just to like change the narrative from this nonstop drumbeat of Joe Biden needs to drop out. Say anything. Say the craziest Donald Trump thing you can come up with just to get people to stop focusing on Joe Biden, because you needed to rescue Joe Biden. Because Kamala Harris is going to be much more difficult. And that's obviously been proven true, I think, now. But even at the time when, you know, she was going to drop out, I said, when the debate happened, I said, look, I watched the conversation with her and Anderson Cooper. It was much better than Joe Biden could do. It's not good, but it's much better. So I want to give you a preview or a little look back at the only interview she's done in the last 61 days. This is Anderson Cooper right after the debate, maybe 2 hours after the debate, talking to Kamala Harris, who is in full damage control mode. They didn't send Joe Biden out there. They knew that would be a bad idea. They said, I don't know, get Kamala on TV, see if she can save it. Here is an exchange from that conversation.
John King has described a panic inside the Democratic Party right now because of President Biden's performance in tonight's debate. He's been hearing from Democratic lawmakers and others around the country. Some within your own party are wondering if President Biden should even step aside. What do you say to that?
Listen, first of all, what we saw tonight is the president making a very clear contrast with Donald Trump on all of the issues that matter to the American people. Yes, there was a slow start, but it was a strong finish. And what became very clear through the course of the night is that Joe Biden is fighting on behalf of the American people, on substance, on policy, on performance. Joe Biden is extraordinarily strong.
The last time Kamala Harris was in the middle of an interview, it was to tell you that Joe Biden was still fine, right? He was, look, he had a bad start, but he had a strong finish. And he was great on his performance tonight, I guess towards the end. I don't know when he was great. But a lot of this was just the deflecting thing, and that's what she does in these interviews. And she does it relatively well. She'll kind of restate the question and then move over to the thing that she wants to say. What she wanted to say there was Donald Trump was worse, right? That was one of the big pitches we got in the weeks after the debate. It was, well, actually, Donald Trump was lying all the time, and why didn't anyone focus on that? That was one of the first things they rolled out to complete and utter failure. But you could see there that, like, that is not nearly as bad as something that Joe Biden would do in that particular situation. It wasn't a good answer, but it was a somewhat competent political answer. But it was also filled with lies. It was not a good performance at the beginning or the end by Joe Biden. And, you know, look, she tried to keep this going. You know, one of the things that's been interesting about this is she's been saying he's sharp as a tack behind the scenes over and over and over and over again. We now know that all of that was a bunch of lies. But what maybe people forget is even after the debate, she was still trying to pitch this nonsense to people after the freaking debate. Watch.
The person we saw tonight, the president we saw tonight on that stage, is that how he is every day?
The Joe Biden that I work with every day is someone who, as I have said, has performed in a way that has been about bringing people into the Oval Office, Republicans and Democrats, to compromise in a way that is extraordinary these days because it just doesn't happen, but Joe Biden can make it happen. The Joe Biden I see is someone who goes to our allies around the world and strengthens NATO to the point that there are two new members of NATO who just about 4 years ago, people said, is NATO even have a reason for existing? The Joe Biden I know is someone who has delivered 800,000 new manufacturing jobs and bringing manufacturing back to the United States, not shipping jobs out like Donald Trump did. So that's the Joe Biden I know.
I mean, imagine this. This is the last time she actually was asked any difficult questions. And it was by Anderson Cooper. Give him credit. This was the beginning of that golden age of journalism, the dawn of it. So Democrats are completely supporting this plan of just not doing any interviews. They are endorsing shielding Harris from interviews. This is from the Washington Times. And it's true. This is what they're doing. And you have to say, it's kind of smart, right? Like, I mean, I'd argue this is, if I were in the back room, talking to Kamala Harris about what her strategy should be, I would endorse the same strategy. Now, I would be a soulless monster for doing it because it hurts the country. But if all I wanted to do was make her win, I would endorse this exact same strategy. Now, Bill Maher points out that, look, there are some upsides from going to talking to voters. Normally, you have to do that sort of thing. And he talked about this in his interview with Quentin Tarantino.
I mean, you see, Kamala, I mean, I'm glad she's doing well. I'm glad we have a real fight now for president. But doesn't talk to the press, you know, would never go near me. And I'm, you know, when you won't go near the people who are going to vote for you,
yeah.
I'm going to vote for you. Do I have to love everything? No, I don't. It just shows they're afraid. And you're right. I see it so more much.
Well, hold on. I don't. Okay. You know what? I don't see her. Well, there's no reason for her to go on your show before the election, but I can actually see her.
Yes, there is. Because I speak to the exact voter she needs, the person who is in the middle, the person who is not ideologically captured by either side. Now, there are some who watch who are that, and everyone is welcome. I need a bigger audience all the time. I'm greedy that way. But basically, that's exactly the audience she needs. The MSNBC crowd is already voting for her. People who watch me, who will decide, this election will probably be decided in like four states.
First of all, is Bill Maher really short or is Quentin Tarantino really tall? Do we know the answer to that? Anyone know? I don't know. That's the first thing I noticed. But Bill Maher's right there, obviously. She should be out here talking to voters. Of course she should. As should Donald Trump, right? Like he is doing that. J.D. Vance certainly is doing that. Kamala is avoiding it. But I want to give you what Quentin Tarantino said in response to that clip, because this has gone sort of viral and people are you know, kind of criticizing Quentin Tarantino's approach here. But I mean, if you had Kamala Harris as your client, I think you'd probably say he's right here. Watch.
I think there's just all about winning the election, all right? And then the easiest path to winning the election, look, you can talk about maybe she should have had more guts about this or that and the other, but we're the president.
Right.
And Trump's not the president, and we're the president, and now it's going to be about this. But this is about winning. What most people don't give the Democrats enough credit for, all right, but we give the Republicans credit for, it's like, no, sometimes it's just about winning. And it doesn't matter how we look
right
at this moment. It's about winning.
Right.
This is about winning.
Yep.
All right.
No, it is.
It's a mad dash, and she is running, and she's not stopping to stumble.
And you know what?
And there's nothing wrong with stopping this. I'm going to vote for her anyway, no matter what she says in a stupid interview.
Exactly.
So don't stop.
You're right. I couldn't be more on that page.
Well, it's kind of was the opposite of the page you just had there. But still, the point is, and by the way, it's Bill Maher's pretty short. That's the answer to the trivia question for today. But the situation here is, I think Quentin Tarantino's right on this, right? You might not agree with Tarantino, but like what he's saying here is the truth. Hide her away from everybody, just like they hid Joe Biden, and maybe have a chance. If people know who she is, you're going to lose. Those are the two facts here. If people know who Kamala Harris is, you lose. So do everything you can to hide who she is. I mean, that's politics 101 right there. And she's attempting to do it. The question is, will the American people allow it to happen? Will the media allow it to happen? I think the media will. But at the end of the day, if the American people rise up and they show in polls, for example, that 75-80% of people are demanding her to do these interviews, she's going to have to do them. And at that point, we will see who she really is, hopefully. And once people see that, if we choose wrong at that point, we deserve every little thing that we get. But frankly, I will be very surprised if the American people see who Kamala Harris is and they actually choose to go down that path. Don't let your retirement dollars become a weapon used against everything you hold dear. Kind of sounds like a basic thing that we should all already be doing, but honestly, we're probably not. Constitution Wealth knows how to do this. They can be your financial fortress, helping you defend the values with every single dollar that you have. This is the Patriot's choice in wealth management. If you have, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars, first of all, congratulations, it's good for you. But if you've been a success, maybe you've been able to save some cash and you're looking at your retirement plans, you want that to grow, but you want to avoid ESG and DEI and CRT and all those things. Well, how do you do that? You know, you have these big funds and it's not really always clear. It's kind of hard to see where your money's going. You just kind of have like a three-letter symbol. That's not enough information. Would you like to minimize the amount of money in your portfolio to going to things like gambling or pornography or abortion or God knows what else? Constitution Wealth can help you by divesting your money from corporations that mock your values. Your investments are some of the most powerful weapons you have to fight the culture war. That's what the idea of the parallel economy is all about. With Constitution Wealth, you can partner with advisors who truly understand and share your conservative, political, and patriotic values. Take action now. Visit ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. Sign up for a free consultation today. It's ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I'm joined now by Dan Andros. He's managing editor at CBN and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you should subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Dan, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We're in a weird time in the election, and I don't even care. I don't care who you're supporting. I imagine this is the exact same as people who have totally different opinions than me. But, like, we are looking at an election right now which has been completely insane and, I mean, totally unpredictable. But also just, I think, generally speaking, sort of depressing. Do you get that sense from people around you?
In a sense, yes, right? And for me, part of that is just that I feel like whoever wins, there's going to be chaos on the other side, right? Like, if Trump were to win, you have cities are going to burn. I mean, it's just, I don't know, that's just been the history. Whenever Democrats don't get what they want, they just set things on fire, apparently. So that's what they do. And then, you know, I don't think anybody on the Trump side of things, if he were to lose, they're given how they reacted last time, a lot of them, I don't think they're going to believe it. They're just not going to believe. They're going to say, you know, it was, you know, rigged or stolen or whatever. There's going to be a lot of people who feel that way. And so regardless of what you think about all those reactions, it's just going to be utter chaos, right? I was joking with somebody the other day, Stu, that I miss the day. I actually miss, do you remember when Romney and Obama were debating and they'd talk and they'd be like, no, on line 42 of the policy, it says this. You'd be like, no, actually, but here's what that means on line 42. Like, substantive issues, right? Regardless of where you stood on either of those guys, right? Like, it was, you know, you were talking about issues that were actually going to be things that impacted you. Now it's just like, joy, we're happy, and we're full of joy in this campaign or something.
Yeah.
We've got momentum. Like, it's just nothingness.
Yeah,
it's nothingness.
It's funny. You can't make something joyful by just saying joy. That's not how...
It came out of nowhere.
It's like, so weird. And, like, I get there was a tonal change, and I think they were trying to express that. And it was interesting because, you know, whatever you say, if you're on the left, like, you might agree with Kamala Harris and agree with Joe Biden and want them to be president. But, like, you did see a very negative approach with it from Biden, right? Like, you saw the red stage behind him, the red wall behind him, and the Star Wars-esque villain speech that he made directly from the emperor, I believe. You know, you had that. You're always calling your opponents fascist, and they're going to ruin the nation, and they're dangerous to democracy and all this. And Harris has done, you know, they tried to do this little switch where they were like, well, they're just weird. And they tried all these different tactics. But that's just all tonal, right? Like, at the end of the day, the thing they're presenting is exactly the same thing that Biden was giving us, which, in my view, was a failure. It was a disaster for America. It's not something that the American people liked all that much. He had a 36% approval rating before he dropped out, before the debates even happened. And at the end of the day, they're just trying to dress up the same exact set of policy proposals. I wish we could. That's if she has any. You mentioned the policy proposal thing, Dan. I don't even know. Does she have any policy proposals?
I don't know either. And that's another thing is that's got me particularly frustrated. It's just the media's full blown. And we've talked about the ascension into activism, but you see it on display here, right? Like, look at what's driving the media. They showed up all of a sudden. Like, I think here's my assessment of the situation of how this unfolded from the end of Biden to the beginning of Harris is the media got, after the debate, it was like the gig was up and they got tired of playing Weekend at Bernie's. Like, they just got tired of trying to carry the corpse of Biden's campaign around and trying to hide it, trying to make it look alive. Like, they just couldn't do it anymore. They're like, you know what? This is just enough. Like, we're done with this. It doesn't work. Get out. And they successfully got him out. And then now they're just happy. And so now nothing matters. Now it's just like, guys, everything's great. I mean, Gavin Newsom's out there just joking about that they switched candidates. Oh, yeah, transparent. We booted him. Like, they're laughing at you. Yeah. And so that part of it is, to me, the media. I mean, this is the same media by and large, and social media, except for X, that basically banned outlets, legitimate news outlets, over a true story, the Hunter Biden laptop story. That happened. That's insane to me that happened. But this is the same media. So I'm not holding my breath. I mean, it's incredible. We're probably going to only have one debate if that thing holds up, that agreement, which is incredible. I mean, that's, you got to think about where we're at now. We're at a place where they consider the stakes too high, Stu, where they're going to pull a Hobbs. They're going to pull a Katie Hobbs, and they're just going to put their heads in the sand and just hope to ride it out for 2 months. Like, that's insane, and that's honestly a travesty to the country and to American voters who deserve information. They deserve to know who they're voting for, but I don't know that the media certainly doesn't care, and unless people speak up about it and care enough, then I mean, I think we've been beaten over the head so many times, see if you agree with this, that we're just like, whatever, just put the options up there. I'll go. I don't want to listen anymore. Is that what America's, like, resorted to at this point?
I think many people have resorted to that, and that's part of the problem, right? Like, I mean, you realize that most people just don't follow this stuff at all. They pop in for the election in the last couple of months, and that's all they do. You know, and looking at your kind of timeline of events there, Joe Biden is out there, you know, and they are building him up as sharp as attack, and actually behind closed doors, he's wonderful. And then they switch on a dime that debate night, and they turn into the greatest journalist of all time. And we get 3 weeks of, you know, award-winning journalism from every journalist in the field. And, you know, the only reason they switched there is because they thought for sure Biden was going to lose. That it wasn't because they thought the gig was up or they got caught. It was because they thought he was no longer going to help the cause that they wanted to win. So they changed. And that's just really, really frustrating. And like, the whole pitch at the Democratic convention was frustrating to me. I mean, they came up, and one of the things I noticed they were hitting on a lot were, you know, a lot of people, and this isn't too new from the Democrats, but hitting up people who are successful in their careers. They're always going after people who have achieved a lot of things and calling them the bad guys. And there was this new pitch at the DNC this time against the concept of even attempting to get generational wealth. They vilified the process of trying to achieve generational wealth as if it was on its face a negative. But is that the way we should be thinking about it?
No, and I may have a contrarian take on that, but first of all, that message was really funny coming from Oprah Winfrey, and Michelle Obama. Right. Like, Like, okay, Michelle, did you write that one? Which one of your 18 houses did you write that in? And Oprah, which Hawaiian island that you own did you write that speech on? I mean, it's just, I mean, how they say this stuff with a straight face is beyond me. But no, I think if you look at how our society is sort of set up and criticize generational wealth, like, I think it's something that we should be striving for as families. Like, and it shouldn't be something put down when someone achieves it. And it's not just, oh, I had a successful business and I got rich, I just give my kids a bunch of money. No, that's not what I'm talking about. We should be doing things that set our kids up for success. And I think any parent would probably agree, yeah, I want to do as many things as I can to set my kid up for success. But the things that culture tells us and society tells us kind of seem to fly in the face of that. Like, why are we sending them off to hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt in college and then kicking them out of the house right away and saying, good luck? I mean, we did it and we liked it. It was so fun that we struggled. Like, why are we doing that? So maybe taking a closer look at that. But yeah, I don't think it should be viewed as a negative.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have, like, I can understand both sides of this at some level, where you don't want your kid to be someone who has everything handed to them and gets the silver spoon in their mouth and never has to achieve anything on their own. And so, you know, the idea of self-reliance, I think, is really, really important, certainly central to my, you know, belief, my worldview, and I know yours as well. But there's a difference between, like, this idea of self-reliance and learning those things over time and sort of just throwing them in the deep end of the pool and never giving them any upper hand. Like, one of the reasons I come to work every day is because I want to give my kids a chance at a better life. And I want to give them a better life now, but also when I'm gone. I mean, I don't think that's a crazy thing to hope for, but at least in the Democratic Party now, that's like the villain.
Yeah, no, it is. And, like, I mean, you think about all the taxes they set up to try to make it harder to, like, do things like hand over properties and do all this stuff. But you know, just doing simple things like, I don't know, how we set up our housing situation, right? Like, why aren't we, when we're looking at properties to invest in, when we're looking at homes, like, getting something that your kids will be able to utilize, maybe a big enough property somewhere, don't live in the most expensive place in the world in a technology age where you can, in many cases, work from home. But trying to set up your property in a way, and it might take a generation or two, it might take a couple times, it might take like one iteration of family members coming together with an idea and getting a property that has multiple homes on it that you can pass down in your future family, right? So that the older family is living in the home that's, you know, maybe smaller and it's just easier to take care of. And so, yeah, it's not an idea of just give your kid everything and not instill values. I mean, I would say, like, self-reliance, like, I don't know. I mean, you need to provide for your immediate family, your spouse and whatnot, but I think we should rely on our families more than we do and value that, right? Like, and that, but you can teach somebody to work hard and say, hey, like, you have to have a job. You have to work, as you know, 6 days a week or 5 days a week or whatever a normal job you can get is. You have to do these things. I think you can instill those values in somebody and then still help them with stuff. And still, hey, if you've got a family property that ends up having a couple structures on it, like maybe one of the kids gets a job, build a house on that property, and then they're there. That gives them a head, that gives the future generations a head start. Like, they could live in there when they're starting a family. They don't have to. I mean, look at the people now, the videos of desperation we're seeing now from younger people. And, you know, I know conservatives and older people will like to mock those and go, oh, well, welcome to the real world. But it is, I mean, you look at this economy, it's horrible right now. I mean, like, trying to buy stuff, I mean, like, prices of houses have, like, gone up a ton and inflation is insane. But I would just question the wisdom in our structures. Like, why are we making it? Why are we throwing a kid into New York City and saying, good luck? I mean, it's like $6,000 for a closet a month. Like, who can do that?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do that. So, you know.
I think encouraging, look, a tighter family unit should be something we're striving for, certainly as conservatives, as Christians, as people who, you know, who are believe in the nuclear family. But it's a balance, right? It's about, like, encouraging, you know, being helpful without creating complacency. And there is a line, I think, there that you can walk, you know, if it's at all possible. I mean, I always think about it this way. It's like, Like, I want to help my kids. I want to help other family members. What I don't want is to be a burden on them. I don't want it to be a requirement that I need them to step in. So I try to pursue both of those lines, right? Like, if I come to a point of where I would need that help, I hope somebody would be around and care enough to help out. But it's not always possible. It's not always something that you can do. And I just want to make sure I'm not depending on the government for those things, because you depend on the government, it's usually a bad outcome.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at this. Like, that's a great point, because I think if you know, when my kids are starting to get to that age where maybe they're looking to start families, and so my daughter's my oldest and she's in college now, you know, but it's, you still have to have rules, right? Like, I'm not going to just let you sit here at my house and eat popcorn and watch Netflix all day long. Like, that's not happening, right? And I think maybe in some of these scenarios where we look at just socialites and, you know, who are just living the life,
right,
I think that's probably in a lot of cases what ends up happening, right? Because they've got millions and billions of dollars and they just don't care. They're just like, whatever, just use it. But then I think that sets up a bad and unhealthy pattern. But, you know, you instill the values and have rules, right? Like, and have guidelines like that. But I think, to your point, I mean, I think having it as an option, right? Hey, we're going to have these things available to you if you want to use them, right? Like, you know, you can live out in the shed there. I'll put an air conditioner in or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Or a room in the house. You know, hey, stay here. Yeah. As long as you're trying to be productive, you're trying to make your life better, you're not just sitting here leeching off of me. As long as you're trying to do that, like, maybe there's more room for that than maybe we've considered before. I mean, keeping your family close should be a goal, not some, you know, boogeyman.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And if you look at a lot of politicians and the progressives in particular, what is the first thing they want to do? They want to destroy the family. They like want to just completely annihilate the traditional family structure. And, you know, when we look at all, you know, you've done this enough working with Glenn for so long, looking at all these Marxist philosophies and like destroying the nuclear family. It was on Black Lives Matter's page as well for a while until they scrubbed it. But that to them is it's a roadblock to getting their political goals, because if families are independent and they're able to function and thrive and not need all of this help from others, you know, it's a detriment to their political goals and their political power. So you're actually making it harder for the government to work themselves into a job if you don't need them. You know what I mean? And I think we talk about that as conservatives a lot, right? We're like, hey, like, you should just pick yourself up by, but okay, yes, the principle is correct, but maybe we do that as a family unit, not as an incredibly micro family where, you know, our kids are going off and then we just boot them out of that family circle.
It's a lot to think about. Dan Andros, managing editor of CBN News. Be sure to check him out at CBN's Quick Start podcast. Head over and subscribe today. Dan, thanks so much for coming on, man.
All right, Stu, thanks.
We talk about being self-reliant, maybe as a family unit, and you know, we know that Americans are really hurting financially right now. Healthcare costs are out of control. The government, of course, isn't the answer. So what is? Well, let me present to you Lassie Health. They are here to shake things up. L-A-A-S-Y Health. It's not health insurance. It's access to the healthcare that you want without all the red tape and the restrictions and the inflated costs. Coverage starts at like $30 a month. So for that, you're going to get transparent pricing, comprehensive coverage tailored to your needs, and access to healthcare services without breaking the bank. There are no annual or lifetime caps on services, and you can start a plan at any time. You'll get over 400 prescription medications for free as part of your plan. That's a big deal. You also get free unlimited virtual health counseling, free 24/7 virtual urgent care, lab tests up to 60% off, imaging tests up to 75% off, procedures and surgeries up to 50% off. Why not check this out? Lassie Health, L-A-A-S-Y, Lassie Health. It's a game changer. You can check out affordable plans that you put you in control of your health at healthylink.com/stew. That's where you find Lassie Health, healthylink.com/stew. For a limited time, you get your first month free, up to $100 off eligible plans. So get healthy, be healthy, stay healthy without breaking the bank at healthylink.com/stew, healthylink.com/stew for Lassie Health. Well, we were just complaining that we are not talking enough about policy. And I, as you may know, agree with that wholeheartedly. But what am I doing about it, right? Well, let's talk about policy a little bit. Harris has flip-flopped on the border funding wall, funding the border wall, which is really kind of fascinating. when you think about it. I mean, she really hated it. She said it was racist. She said it was a vanity project. She said it would, she couldn't believe that you would take taxpayer dollars to fund something like this. I mean, we don't know if she's flip-flopping because she's not saying that she's actually supporting the opposite. The one thing she kind of is saying, though, is I would support this bipartisan bill that kind of died on the vine a few months ago. This was the Lankford bill. And Lankford, who is a Republican and is good on a lot of topics, came out and said, hey, in that bill is the border wall. Like, you can't have that bill without the border wall. $650 million going to the border wall. Now, she's saying she agrees with that. So technically, I guess she's now for the border wall. Now, Trump wanted $18 billion for the border wall. So much different wall, of course. But now I guess she is a racist and is also engaging in her own vanity project because she also wants a wall. I don't know. Did she actually flip-flop? We don't know. She hasn't said anything about it. So we don't know for sure. Kamala Harris also has a plan to hike corporate income taxes, and that would fall on all Americans. This is in Reason.com. Nearly all Americans would face a higher federal tax burden if Harris followed through on Joe Biden's proposal to raise the corporate income tax 28% from 21%. This is something that she says she supports. The New York Times reported this weekend that Harris's campaign signaled the supports for Biden's plan for $5 trillion in tax hikes. Isn't that amazing? Like, I remember every election until very recently, everyone would deny when they talked about raising taxes. Left is now just embracing it. $5 trillion in tax hikes? And they're just like, yeah, that's our policy. It's the one thing she's actually taken responsibility for. It's incredible. They are, this, by the way, would hit everyone, including the lowest income category, those earning less than $10,000. They would also see a tax hike if this rate was changed. No surprise there to us, maybe, but also showing that she's a blatant liar. And look, in election news, I have plenty of disagreements policy-wise with, well, Donald Trump, RFK Jr., and Tulsi Gabbard, all three of them. But it's hard to say that this is not a good political move for Donald Trump, bringing in Gabbard and RFK Jr. into the fold. He's now tapping RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard for a presidential transition team. If you have a moment, we talked to Tulsi Gabbard on the phone, on the radio program earlier today. Worth your time to check out what she's saying. We also talked to RFK Jr. this week. You know, again, like, I've got my policy disagreements with both of them. But Donald Trump has, of course, the power to let them do as much or as little as he wants, and he can control that. And both Gabbard and RFK Jr. bring different, you know, groups. I mean, RFK Jr. brings a specific group of voters that were his voters. Tulsi Gabbard, I think, is more what she can do. She can appeal to a more moderate voter as well. So that's going to be kind of an interesting package, and Donald Trump is embracing it. He really wants to win. Kamala Harris really wants to win. It's going to be a very interesting next 9 or 10 weeks if we ever hear a word from the Democratic candidate. Imagine for a moment that you're about to make the biggest financial decision that you will make in your life, whether it's either buying or selling a house, maybe both. And what would it mean to not only have help, but have the best help possible? Imagine what it would be like to not have to worry about whether you were going to find the right contractors to do the repair work, or the right photographer to present your home the best way possible, or the right mortgage company, the right everybody that you're going to need to make this not only a smooth process, but also a really profitable one for you and your family. Well, good news, you don't have to just, you know, imagine that. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is actually a real thing. It exists. It pairs you with the best real estate agent in your area, someone who knows the best practices, someone who understands the crazy housing market, and someone who is a team leader and a closer, someone you can trust. If you're buying a home, if you're selling a home, please get in touch with them. They're going to show you the right way to do this at RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. The name kind of says it all. Go to RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's a free service to you, realestateagentsitrust.com. Really kind of a watershed moment, I think, with the battle of big tech. Zuckerberg said Biden administration pressured Meta to censor COVID-19 content. A quick quote here. In 2021, senior officials from the Biden administration, including the White House, repeatedly pressured our teams, this is Zuckerberg speaking in a letter, for months to censor certain COVID-19 content, including humor and satire, and expressed a lot of frustration with our teams when we didn't agree. I believe the government pressure was wrong. I regret that we were not more outspoken about it. I also think we made some choices that, with the benefit of hindsight and new information, we wouldn't make today. Wow. I mean, look, you can be skeptical. There's a lot of government pressure coming after him at this point. Maybe this is not a real transition for Mark Zuckerberg. But honestly, I never thought I'd see an article like or a letter like that from Mark Zuckerberg. I'm surprised and pleased, I think. I think it's a good thing. So I'm glad to see that happening. Hopefully it leads to something else, maybe more changes and more belief in free speech. Okay, speaking of free speech, I talk all the time. I talk today on the radio program, of course, but then also on the Megyn Kelly Show. She's in a great run of success, one of the biggest YouTube channels out there, biggest podcasts out there. In fact, her YouTube channel had more, you know, views in the last month than like NBC and CBS and all these incredible, you know, major media companies. She's doing incredible work. And I had a great conversation with her and also Stephen Miller Redstees on Twitter. It was a great conversation. Had a lot of fun there. And then we also will have a new State of the Race podcast coming up this week. Make sure to get subscribed there. State of the Race on my podcast feed. Go there, subscribe. You'll not only get this program, but you'll also get State of the Race. We'll see you tomorrow.